Welcome to Allegedly. I'm Theo Vaughn.
And I'm Matthew Cole Weiss. And today we have an awesome guest, Mr. Kevin Pollak.
Please be seated.
All right.
We are. And Kevin, you'll know from absolutely everywhere. I think that's what I'm going to say.
How many movies have you done? Or how many projects?
I don't know the exact number. Films, 76. But I will say seven of them are really good. I'm just turning my phone off, by the way, in case you're wondering, why is he on his phone? We've started the show.
No worries, man. You're probably filming something right now.
Yeah, I'm filming this.
Are we in one of your movies right now? That's amazing.
Yeah, this could be.
Kevin Pollak, who is actually, you know, very well known for movies including Usual Suspects, A Few Good Men, which is one of my favorites.
And thanks to TBS, it's on three times a day.
Yeah, That's true. Do you get like a...
Know where you're going with that.
Yeah.
He's also done two stand-up comedy specials, so it's cool that we're in here at the Comedy Store. He probably gets accused of being in a lot of movies, I would guess.
Accused?
Do people think you're in movies that you're not in?
I swear you were in Home Alone a couple times, and yeah, I might watch again tonight.
I guess that does happen. they'll think I'm someone else.
Yeah. Do you ever play along?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, because I'm a character actor, I've had the joy of, you know, you can get a table at a restaurant based on your face. My fiance and I like to call it getting face. And yet, you know, I can walk down the street without anybody giving a shit.
Right.
Which is great. I mean, TMZ covered my divorce and clearly a slow news day for them. But for the most part, I go unscathed.
Gotcha. And Ari's here too with us today. Hey, Ari.
Hey.
Kevin, we're so stoked to have you today. We're going to start round one. That's where Matt and I are each going to take 3 minutes and tell a story. You can interject during the stories. We can mess around, whatever. And then you're going to judge who gave the best story.
Based on whatever you want.
Sweet Jesus on a pie tin. Let's do this.
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, I'll go first.
Okay, cool.
All right.
You got 3 minutes on the clock starting
on the clock, Ari Manis.
Now.
Okay. My story happened the other night.
Uh-oh.
There's a man named Joey Diaz who's a comedian. He's one of the best comedians. He's a total savage. And I went over and did his podcast with him and the flying Hebrew, Lee Syatt, who's this kind of beautiful little fellow, looks a little bit like a strong, hearty gerbil kind of, right?
Okay.
And
strong, hearty what?
Gerbil.
Okay.
Got your type now?
Yeah, that's him. Short arms, lot of body, lot of heart.
Okay.
Well, we get over there, and sometimes Joey smokes a lot of weed. Joey's like, he parties hard, right? And so I get over there, and they're smoking pot. I don't really want to smoke pot. And so they give me some mushrooms, right? So
all right.
I just
you declared I don't want to smoke pot, so they said, here, have some mushrooms instead.
Yeah.
Okay.
So next thing you know, all of us eat some mushrooms, right? And the podcast kind of gets going. And then it just goes off the rails, man. Like Lee is like literally like laying by the computer with his eyes closed, making like this squealing sound, like for about 70 minutes. The podcast went for 2 hours. Finally, we just had to shut it down. It just got really, really squirrely and awesome. I talked about a pedophile that I knew growing up.
Pedophile? What else?
Yep. You know, like a child molester.
Ah.
Like,
and
I know them as pedophiles. Yeah. But
like Encyclopedia Brown.
You're talking about a person that does feet.
In pedophilia Brown.
Yes, yeah, so a pedophile. And then we went through a couple of different things. So anyway, I had two sets that night still at the Improv and at the Comedy Store, right? Here. So I hit up the Improv and I got over there and got on stage and I was supposed to do 15 minutes. They left me up there for a half hour.
Great set, by the way. I was there for that.
Oh, thank you very much. Set. Like a croissant just baking in the lights up there. Like I could feel the light. That's how warm it was. I used drop the N-word a couple times.
Oh,
it got
no.
insane, but it got creative, right?
Which N-word are you talking about?
Nappy?
Yeah, and then we'll go with that.
Enigma. Let's use that one.
It's got an N in it, so let's...
Right. I would never say sand enigma, though. That's racist.
Okay.
But then I came here to do a set, and that's when it really just went downhill. And it was just about 15 minutes of just bombing up there, and just like nobody cared. I almost started a fight with a man. I couldn't tell if he was angry at me or not.
Wow.
And it just really hit rock bottom.
You blame the crowd, though.
I don't know. I don't know if I do or not.
Yeah. You might not have been present.
Yeah. But I blame myself, but I also probably blame the crowd.
Sure.
A little bit.
I think it was a bad crowd. And that's it, man.
Who gave you these mushrooms?
Uncle Joey Diaz, Coco.
Oh, he's okay.
And his nickname's Coco as well.
We were considering that for our guest for our podcast to give mushrooms, but we just don't think it's very professional.
And he's a good man, and it wasn't. And I wish that I had a crazier story, but I think some of it's still in my system, so I'm still just living that out.
Time.
All right.
That's it. Joey Diaz.
When was this?
Yes, 2 days ago.
You also right. It was Wednesday, and you also left out that you called me on the way to the improv just to tell, you were like, I just wanted to let you know I'm on mushrooms right now, and my lips feel really soft. You said that.
Lovely.
Well, they did, man.
All
they
right,
really
that's,
did.
That's your story.
I got a soft face, I think. And
you were driving when you called?
Oh, geez.
I mean,
that's
I
what
know.
I said. I said, do you want me to meet you there and drive you to the comedy store? And you're like, I think I got it.
Right. I was like, I'm already halfway there. I think I got it. So I'm sorry if I endangered anybody or if anybody's ever lost someone, got hit by a mushroom driver.
Okay.
So
well,
that was a poor choice.
I'll take the reins from that one. I have two stories. I'm trying to figure out which one to tell. All right, I'm gonna tell this one. So I used to do interviews on red carpets and stuff, like for different magazines. And I've told stories of some awkward ones I've had where like Lauren Bacall spit on me.
Sure. You probably had that coming.
Yeah, probably. I don't know. She was kind of a bitch. And then,
she could have just been exhaling. She was like 90 years old.
Yeah, that's true. Like Cameron Diaz threw me out of an event once. And sometimes, and not because of who I was, just because of what I was standing for, you know, and I was just like working for Us Weekly or a magazine like that. So this was actually an interview I did that was really an awesome interview that I was very excited about, but something awkward happened during the interview. So I got to interview Christopher Reeve. Christopher Reeve.
Doesn't matter now.
Post accident and when he was in his get up. Chair, you know,
wheelchair,
what
it, not get up. No, but it's not a suit.
It was more than just a wheelchair. I mean,
he's not a transformer.
There was like stuff everywhere, you know. What
oh,
I
yeah,
mean?
That's
like
true.
There was like,
there was apparatus.
Apparatus yeah. everywhere.
Apparati, I believe. Yeah.
And so he, like, you know, and so I interviewed him because it was for his foundation. It was awesome. Like Robin Williams was there, all this sort of thing. And they were like, okay, you get to go interview him. It's just like a one-on-one behind, like in the hotel room, like I mean, the hotel ballroom, like behind in the hallway or whatever. And they're like, you have to go up to him because like he really cannot speak loudly, you know, because he speaks by like, he can only speak when the exhalation yeah. of whatever comes to him, right?
Oh, wow.
So it would be like pause, you know, and then speak. And so I have this tape recorder, right? And one of the biggest fears when you're doing this is that it doesn't get picked up on the tape recorder. Like I've done it. I've done so many interviews where nothing, you know, it doesn't hear. So I'm like getting it closer and closer to him. And I'm basically like right there and I'm interviewing him. He's really cool. And then I drop the tape recorder into the apparatuses.
Sure, of course.
Into the apparatuses.
Swallowed in by tubes.
I did not know what to do. Right. So it was like one of those things, you know,
where did he start beeping?
No, it didn't start beeping, but it was like caught in there and he's not going to get it for me. Obviously, like he can't move.
Really?
He's not going to do it. And there's nobody there to help me, right?
He's no fucking help. This guy.
This guy, I mean.
With no mobility.
He could have given me a hand, for God's sake, but nope. There was no one there to help me. Nope. And I'm like, well, what do I do? Right? And so.
Leave it.
I could have.
Yeah.
But I said to him, do you mind if I reach around and.
Reach
I gave
around.
Christopher Reeve
what
a reach around.
At that point doesn't want to reach around.
Completely. Yeah. And get, so I had to like put my hands through the apparatuses to get it. I got it, but it was one of the most uncomfortable,
sure,
awkward moments of my career, let alone life. But he was really
reaching
nice about
a
it.
Man?
What?
Reaching around a man.
Oh no, that happens all the time. This is I'm talking about Christopher Reeve. And it was so weird, but I got it. And he was actually like very cool about it, but I was so worried that I was going to like pull a plug, yeah. You know, and that would have been it. And then the whole event would have been over and I would have been the story and all that, but it didn't happen. So I got my tape recorder back and, we finished up the interview and I think they published it. It was a good interview. They didn't publish that part, but
time.
Okay. Well, I'm going to step in real quick. They had a fundraiser one time when I was in college for a football player that had gotten paralyzed and they did a big fundraiser for him at another football game a year later and everybody gave money and they bought him like a really nice like chair that he could move around in and it had to plug in every now and then to charge his systems that he needed, mm-hmm. A la Reeves. And they also bought him a dog with a little money they had left over. The dog pulled the plug out of the wall one day and the guy freaking died.
Oh.
Whoa.
a crazy.
Wow.
If only you had told that story, you would have won.
Well, so by process of elimination, what are you saying?
I think I'm making it clear. That's the most fucked up thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, you use a handicap person.
You can't compete, I think is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I understand that. Kevin.
Oh,
I'll
tell you
that.
A story afterwards of this actor who thinks I have Parkinson's disease out there, and I just played along with it because I didn't know what to do. If only I had taken mushrooms when I interviewed Chris Marie, it would have been the perfect story.
The point. If only you had dipped into someone's living apparatus while on mushrooms, you would have walked away with it.
All right. Dang. So I will happily take the win for that round. And now we move on to round two, which is our interview segment where we will be asking you questions. So now you are in the hot seat, sir.
And let's call it the lead. Let's not call it the win, please.
Okay. The lead. Okay.
No. Gladly take the lead.
I took the win of that round, but I take the lead of the entire podcast.
You're up one zip. We are nowhere near done.
I like your attitude, Kevin.
Fair enough. All right, dude. You want to start off? Or?
Yeah, I'm going to start off. So I'm going to say this, Kevin. You once played a vice president in Deterrence.
Deterrence, and he's a sitting president who's on the campaign trail to be elected for the first time because he was a vice president. The president died. So when the movie opens, he's actually a sitting president.
Mm.
Yeah.
And similar to... Christopher Reeves could have played him, it sounds like. Who would, for sitting, just because he was handicapped,
gotcha.
Play on words.
Gotcha.
Who would your vice president candidate picks be for the two current contenders out of Trump and Hillary Clinton?
Yikes.
Straight into the politics.
Wow.
Well, and you don't have to discuss politics, but who would you pick as their vice president?
Here's my take on that. I hadn't done stand-up in a really long time, and I went out and did some gigs recently, and I felt the responsibility as a comedian to talk something about politics because we're in the thick of it. But I also know if you speak your heart on stage, you will alienate 50% of the audience instantly. And it's one of the most polarizing campaigns in memory. So I would just talk about how everyone in the audience hates one of the two people running.
Mm-hmm.
Hates them. Not can live without them. Just wants to set them on fire. It is the most polarizing thing I've ever seen.
Agreed.
So then I realized, rather than talking about how I felt about either candidate, or in this case, who would be a good running mate, I now realize I no longer trust the person who wakes up one day, looks at themselves in the mirror, and says, you know what? I should be president.
Right.
Because you got to run it by the mirror first.
Right.
With a straight face. Right. Before you run it by anyone else.
That's true.
Then you got to run it by the wife who calls you out on all your bullshit or husband. And, first that conversation with the mirror. I got this. Right.
Yeah.
I so got this.
This is like a Dirk Diggler moment.
Right.
From Boogie Nights.
It's the most ridiculous fucking notion that you should be the single most powerful human being on the planet. It. And then you have to run that by your better half. Listen, honey, I was thinking about it, and I can pick up the kids after school. Also, I'm thinking about making a Costco run, so let me know if you need anything there. And I'm going to run for president. Did you record Game of Thrones? Yeah. So that... What and then, what is your better half going to say? You can't even be the president of this house.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
You're going to talk to Putin. Why don't you go negotiate the kitty litter and then we'll patch you through to Moscow. So that my answer to the question is a new routine of mine.
I like it.
Fair enough.
It's okay. A good answer, man. It's
well,
really, it's
speaking
good.
Of controversy, I'm going to ask something about a tweet that you recently put
out. Yeah, do it.
Which was that Marvel movies will not stand the test of time.
No.
But, and because they are taking down the Tower of Terror ride at Disneyland.
Oh, God, this is such a fucking mistake.
They are replacing it with a Marvel-themed attraction,
oh,
correct?
Not any Marvel-themed.
Oh, they have a specific?
Yes.
What is it?
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, that's right, Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's why it specifically makes no sense. First of all, I love the... Oh, you should get to your question.
So my question is, I mean, Disney fans are very... you're a Disney fan through and through.
My better half is complete. Devotee, and I've become more of one.
So what my question was being, why do you think that's a mistake?
Well, first of all, Tower of Terror is themed out to the Twilight Zone, arguably the best written television show in history.
Some of the greatest minds in writing and playwrights in time wrote on that show. So it's kind of amazing that there's a thrill ride at Disneyland based on this incredible TV show. So they're going to do another Guardians of the Galaxy, which clearly they're gearing up taking over Tower to coincide with the opening of this film. Do they have six more Guardians of the Galaxy planned? Because fucking Tower of Terror has been there for a very fucking long time, and this movie is going to come and go. Who gives a shit? So I can't believe that they're taking this institution. Twilight Zone was in the 50s.
It's true, but do you feel like you're ostracized? I mean, Marvel runs Hollywood nowadays by saying that they don't stand the test of time. Do you feel like you're ostracizing yourself as an actor in this industry right now?
I obviously don't give a shit, but
fair enough.
But B through G, I feel like as a genre, they will be remembered, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe 50 years from now they'll be making Marvel movies. I don't believe 20 years from now they'll be making Marvel movies. So yeah, that's what I mean by standing the test.
Right,
time.
Right.
What superhero do you think you'd play best?
Is Jewington? is that a
Captain Jewington?
Yeah.
And you've done two stand-up specials, right?
Well, three.
Three.
Technically.
Okay.
Because they did the, I was in the first, what do they call them? Comedian One Night Stand for HBO, which was a half hour show. And then I've done 2 hours since then.
And you just said a few minutes ago that you'd gotten back on stage recently. Is that something you're starting to get like?
Well, I never stopped. I mean, after A Few Good Men and I started getting offers instead of auditioning.
Right.
It was 1992, stand-up comedy boom of the 80s was dying anyways. Comedy clubs had expanded from 50 to about 350 during the boom of the late 80s. And then by 92, saturation had killed it. Same thing that sort of killed vaudeville. There was just too many venues and not enough inventory, really. Guys were being moved up prematurely from opener to middle to headliner. I think it was Bill Maher who said... because we started out around the same time. So in the late 70s, early 80s, if you're a stand-up comedian and someone said, what do you do? I'm a comedian. They would go, wow, that's amazing. What is that like? And then by the early 90s, what do you do? I'm a stand-up comedian. Oh, yeah, the guy I knew from college is a stand-up comedian. It sounds cool. And then now it's, what do you do? I'm a stand-up comedian. Really? Me too. Me too? What do you mean you too? Who the fuck are you? What does that mean, you too? So, yeah. So then when that died in the early 90s, I started at that same time getting offers to do movies. So it was easy to drift away and just focus on the movies. And then I did way too many in the 90s movies. And then around 2000, 2001, I drifted back and wanted to miss stand-up horribly. And so I started touring again.
In your movies, which you have done so many of, you've worked with some of the biggest.
Like, yes.
You know, Arnold and Denzel.
John Candy,
McConaughey, De Niro. But you've also worked with one that I find fascinating, which is in one of my favorite movies, A Few Good Men, which was Tom Cruise.
Sure.
Now, my first question is, what is it like? Because it doesn't even seem real, like that kind of stardom, that huge stardom. What's it like being around that? And also, what was he like, and did he try to convert you to Scientology?
It's always amazing to me when that question comes up because it seems so genuine. Like, that's an actual concern.
No, it is.
He seems captivating.
No, he's wildly captivating and unbelievably generous. And my experience around him as a professional was historically great.
Okay.
I've not worked with a movie star as generous or one so big that treated me like an equal within the first 9 seconds. In fact, I joke about it now in my act how... And it's also in the book I wrote, How I Slept My Way to the Middle. And I've talked about it a lot, how generous he was, but that he treated me like an equal from the opening moment. So the first 2 weeks of rehearsal, I realized after a couple of hours of being around him, because he had made the mistake of making me feel welcome, the stand-up comedian in me came out. And I found myself giving shit to Tom Cruise about pretty much whatever I wanted.
That's awesome.
Because, again, he made me feel welcome. Right. And I'm busting Tom Cruise's balls about the fact that the pen he's writing with is too fancy looking.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So he was that open and cool and just ridiculously generous, and also just a real professional in terms of not just making other actors feel welcome, but to the crew. And Frank Capra III was the first AD, and one of the hardest jobs on a movie set is a first AD, because they have to decide based on, they're on the set and they're watching the cinematographer, who takes various amounts of times. In that case, Bob Richardson, who does all the great Scorsese movies, and I worked with him on Casino and A Few Good Men. He's brilliant. He's won at least 3 Academy Awards. But he will take fucking forever to light a scene. So the first AD has to figure out when he might actually be ready, and then back that up to, this person takes 7 minutes to come out of their trailer when you knock on the door. This person takes 17 minutes to come out of their trailer on average. Nicholson takes 11 to 40 minutes to come out of his trailer. So you have to gauge all these things, so you bring everyone back to the set around the same time. Mm. So there's this other crew that's working the, you know, the honey wagons and the you know, base camp, they call it. Even though we were shooting on a lot and it was like a 50-yard walk from the soundstage to the trailers, you got to figure all that shit out. Right. So the first AD, it's just ridiculous. And I noticed one day, they knocked on Tom's door, and it was as if he was on the other side of the door in a position like he was about to start a race, like a quarter-mile race. Mm. And because when they knocked on his door, he bolted out of the door and was running to set. And I was walking to set. And I just, you know, again, he made the mistake of making me feel welcome, so I'm giving him shit about running. Where's the fire, buddy? And he goes, come on, man. And I found myself instantly running side by side with Tom to the set, thinking, yeah, right, of course, we should be running. So what I also realized was what he was doing by bolting out of the trailer was to let the first AD know, when you knock on my door, I'm yours. Don't, without saying it, is the addendum. Don't knock on my door until you're ready, without having to say that.
Right. Right.
Just so you know, I'm fucking ready.
As for the Scientology.
And then the Scientology part, he would talk about it if you asked him. Because in 1992 or 91, when we shot the movie, it was not on everybody's hot topic list.
Right.
And so there was a mystery about it. Like, what is the deal with this fucking thing? But also, there wasn't all the controversy surrounding it.
Gotcha.
But so he would talk about it if you had any questions, like I would notice people asking, but he never brought it up once. Not once.
He wasn't trying to push it on you.
Not the opposite of trying to push it. He literally never brought it up.
Right.
And he, you know, they were, he was with Nicole Kidman at the time, and they were, you know, hosting gatherings at their house and super cool and all over each other. But like very open, kind of regular people as opposed to movie stars.
Right.
That's the first thing that happens when you work with these giant people, almost like you don't want them to be normal.
Right.
And then they are, and you go, oh man, like Nicholson, ridiculous. He was a goofball,
right?
Where I expected him to be aloof, like someone that cool. You'd have to talk about, not to.
Right.
Right.
There's Jack over there. Don't talk to him.
Right.
But he was the most gregarious and of all of them.
Huh.
And a total goofball, which I never expected. Again.
Did you run into the opposite? Through your career, have you worked with people who weren't as nice as you expected them to be?
Sure, yeah. And I named them in the book, too, because if you treat me cool, I champion you in the book. And if you were a dick, you're also in the book, you know. Yeah. How I slept my way to the middle, yeah.
Anybody you could tell us that's... Since I haven't read the book yet.
yeah, I mean, okay, so the biggest surprise for people, weirdly, was Michael Clark Duncan, who everyone loved.
The Green Mile, right? the big fella.
Yeah, the big fella, Oscar nominated from the Green Mile.
And he went to the space,
died
too.
Died too early, very young.
He went to space in Armageddon.
Yes. Yeah, before Green Mile, he went to space in Armageddon. So I worked with him the whole nine yards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was... he had been told, apparently, or my guess is, by far too many people. He had just come from shooting the Green Mile. Hadn't been out yet. He had been told clearly by way too many people, you're going to win the Academy Award for that movie. Because by the time he showed up a whole nine yards, he was smelling his own farts for sure.
Right.
Which was so odd because he was so new to show business. Sometimes you'll find people are compensating for insecurity by acting with bravado, which is unfortunate. And what was really weird is that Bruce Willis, who stars in the whole nine yards, had worked with him on Armageddon. And then Tom Hanks apparently called Bruce and said, hey, we're thinking about hiring this guy, Michael Clarke Duncan, for the Green Mile in a very important role. Was he cool on Armageddon? And Bruce gave the big thumbs up. And then for Michael Clarke to then show up on
another Bruce movie
and act like a dick was really weird. So yeah, it's the per diem story. And, do you have a minute?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm coming out of the trailer. It's a night shoot. Anytime people go to the movies and they see a shot that takes place outside in after nightfall, is shot from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. Those are night shoots because you got all the night, all the dark that you can get. And you, when you shoot a bunch of night shoots, you end up turning into a vampire because your body clock gets switched. Mm. Working graveyard. Yeah, yeah. Well, so we're on night shoots and knock on the trailer, open it up. And ready for you on set, Mr. Pollock. It's the pimply face kid from Simpsons. So I get out of the trailer, and here's your per diem. And they hands me this big manila envelope with my name on it. Per diem is your weekly allowance. They pay you in cash usually. And it's kind of funny because all at some point, movie people, actors, they stop seeing their money. It goes from a check to the business manager, to investments, to pay bills. You never actually see your money ever. Hmm. So when you get paid, whether it's $300 or $600 or whatever it is, $6,000 if you're giant stars, in cash on a weekly basis, your room's paid for, your meals are paid for, everything's paid for. This is just fuck you, fuck around. So you'll see someone like Bruce Willis go, $600? Yeah, baby. So it's kind of funny how per diem is the only money we see. So sign for your per diem, Mr. Pollock. So I'm signing for it, and I hear from behind me, the low register voice of Michael Clarke Duncan, who says, where's my per diem? And everyone's sphincter tightens, and we turn around, and there's Michael Clarke. And I go, yeah, man, where's Mike's per diem? Well, sorry, Mr. Duncan, all I gave me was Mr. Pollock's per diem. And then Michael says, how do we know that's not my per diem, and you accidentally put his name on it? And now I think, okay, he's not kidding. He's crazy. So I say, so I just play along with it. Yeah, yeah, put his, well, where's his? That could be his, you know. Trying to, because I feel bad for the lowly PA who's getting shit from Crazy Town. And and I go, well, listen, they'll figure it out, Mike. Let's go to set because they're waiting for us on set now. So we get in the van. They take us to set. And now I see Bruce Willis and Matthew Perry working on the movie, and they're sitting over in their chairs waiting to work, so I go over and sit with them. And we're sitting there for about a half hour, which is way too long to keep John McClane waiting, a.k.a. Bruce Willis. So I finally see him look over at his right-hand man, Stevie, for 30 years. They were bartenders in New York before becoming famous. And he says to Stevie, he taps his watch and says, what the fuck? And Stevie goes, yeah, I don't know. And then Stevie looks at a PA, the closest one he can find, taps his watch and says, what the fuck? That guy shits himself, runs off to get an answer, and comes back with a director, Jonathan Lynn, British guy who'd done My Cousin Vinny, a bunch of other movies, who says, right, sorry, fellas, about the delay. Kevin, you might know something about this. Apparently, Michael Clarke is refusing to go to work because you stole his per diem. Yeah, so this crazy fuck has now convinced himself of something ridiculous.
Wow.
And so I hadn't told Matthew Perry or Bruce Willis while we were sitting around for a half hour. But at this point, Matthew Perry, I remember, jumped out of his chair and said, why would you steal his per diem? And then I explained to them what had happened. And John McClane gets out of his chair and says, I'm going to set this fucker on fire, and starts walking. I said, no, 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 don't go, John McClane. Get back in the seat. I know. Let me talk to him because I'm the only one on the set who knows what actually happened. Maybe I can reason with him. So, because it's a big deal if someone's refusing to go to work. Yes. You're stopping 100 people from working.
Yeah. You know, it's just pretty self-involved.
It's just bullshit.
Yeah.
So I go across the set to find him. He sees me coming. He turns further away. And I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be fun. And I say, hey, Mike, listen. And before I can finish the sentence, he says, yeah, I think twice before taking a man's per diem. And I thought, wow, that's a level of crazy I'm not familiar with.
Wow.
He's not only convinced himself, it's just the two of us. He knows I'm the only one who knows, and he's going to try to pass off this story to me.
And the fact that you guys are making so much money, who probably on this on this movie in general, who cares about this?
And that's what was my answer. Hey, man, I'll have him put your name on the envelope. Honestly and truly, I don't give a shit. Let's just go back to work. Yeah, all right. And then he stands up and really, we're going to work now? Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. And, you know, that's when so I tell bizarre. That story sometimes on stage, it's and I start the story with, I'm going to tell you a story about somebody, and when I mention his name, you're going to go, aw, and you're going to hate me for telling it until we get to the end of the story, in which case I think I'm going to predict everyone's going to be laughing. Because he's just so fucked up.
That's a crazy story, man. Yeah, yeah. Crazy
and you,
story.
And you attribute some of that to this. It's just how fame can go to someone. It can just be bizarre, right?
But, yeah, a lot of times it does compensate for insecurity. So I had one person who ended up being a diva in the movie I directed, and I didn't see it coming at all from
the meeting. Was her name Meryl Streep?
From the meeting.
No.
No, it was a guy.
Oh. Ooh.
Yeah, yeah. I because the movie hasn't come out yet, I don't want to talk shit about him because I need him to do press, but but I'll have to come back. So I was surprised by that.
So I saw you at a poker tournament recently, and I know that we tried to get you in here a couple of months ago. We'd reached out and tried to have you in, and then when I saw your face, I was like, oh, that's Kevin Pollak, and then I'm like, where do I know him from though? I mean, does that happen to you a ton? Because I feel like you had the most like. Recognizable. There's a few stars that have, and I feel like you're one of those that has that. Where do I know him from? Do
you the character get actor thing again is a blessing more than a curse.
Yeah,
for me. Yeah, I, you know, initially because of insecurity, when people come up and go, "What's that? What did I see you in?" and they're snapping their fingers at you, you get a little annoyed.
Yeah, I bet that too. That all the time.
Yeah, man. Like someone
and when they say no, not that. It's got to be something else.
Yeah, yeah. And I found there's no way to win that conversation or even end it quickly. So I usually try to make a joke when they can't figure it out. Because also sometimes they're being innocent. They're trying to let you know that you're famous.
Right.
So they're trying to compliment you by saying, "I know you from the movies." So they try to engage you in a conversation, right, and say, what was the movie I saw? So the answer I finally realized is, I don't know. I wasn't with you when you saw it. I mean, I literally don't know. I could start naming them, and we'd have a ding, ding, ding when you feel comfortable.
That's funny.
But I can't help you with this because I just wasn't there. But they'll get angry sometimes. Like, I remember my then-girlfriend, now fiance, was accosted at the airport. I went into the restroom. Some guy came up to her, and then she'd been around me enough to witness the guessing game.
Yeah.
And so a guy comes up to her as soon as I went to the bathroom, goes, "What movie do I know your boyfriend from?" or whatever he said. He might have said father because she's younger.
Yeah, way to go. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, she's 34 but reads at a 38-year-old level. So she said, again, she'd been around me with the guessing game, so right. She didn't want to play it. So when the guy goes, what did I see him in? She goes, I don't know, maybe, and he goes, and then he like barked at her, "Just tell me." Like, yeah, like she was being a bitch or something.
Right, right.
And
like she had a responsibility to.
Yes. Well, clearly so he felt anxious because I was only going to be in the restroom so
right,
long.
Right.
I'd like to think that's what drove his outburst.
Yeah.
That he didn't want to get caught asking her.
Right. That's funny.
But man. What are you fucking yelling at her for?
That's so bizarre.
Well, yeah. So you know, I stopped being offended by it unless they really won't let it go.
Right.
And then you're just sort of puzzled, like, really? You don't see how this might be offensive?
Right.
And you're not sure who I am? Right. And that it's up to me to help you?
Right.
Honestly.
Like at a certain
point. It's
called
Google.
Yeah.
figure this shit out. Do a little math. And also, I think it stopped offending me because it doesn't, it's okay.
Right.
Honestly, I'm as a character actor, I love that I'm able to do a variety of roles, and I haven't been pigeonholed or famous for just doing this. Mm. Not, you know, the weird thing about A Few Good Men was I'd been doing stand-up for 15 years. It came out when my second HBO special came out.
Wow.
And that movie was such a juggernaut. However people discover you is how they know you. And way more people saw me in that than had seen me do stand-up or even an HBO special.
Right.
Wow. So it basically shit on 15 years of a stand-up career.
Right.
Was the bad news. The good news is you're allowed to be in movies now.
Huh. Right.
Yeah. So I had to educate people. And even now when I go out and do stand-up, 40% of the audience at best knows me from stand-up.
Huh.
60% of, you know, the guy from A Few Good Men's in town. I heard he does stand-up. What are you talking about? That guy? You know. And then there's also a bunch of people who know me from the impressions because
yes.
those end up having an impact. Like if you, I have the queerest brag on the planet, the politically correct use of the word. If you Google Christopher Walken impersonation, over 60,000 search answers come up.
Wow.
Yeah, there's 5 pages on YouTube dedicated to Asians doing Christopher Walken.
Ooh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Christopher Walken.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a rabbit hole you even want to go down, but it's ridiculous.
But yours?
But I'm number one.
Wow. That's
awesome.
Yeah, well, that's the queerest brag ever. But by the way, I might be number one just because I keep telling people that, so they keep checking it to see if I'm lying. So,
have you ever done your impression to him?
Oh, I did it in front of him when he got his hands and feet in cement in the theater on Hollywood Boulevard. Yeah. That was a real weird one. They asked me to be one of only 2 speakers.
Wow.
The other one was Quentin Tarantino, who, of course, directed him in Pulp Fiction. I'd never met him.
Oh, really?
And I'm asked to do this.
Wow.
I felt bad for him.
Yeah.
You know,
this is the best.
Really? There's nobody else? You're going to just call the guy who impersonates him? That's shitty. But there I was in front of the press. You know, Quentin spoke first, and he can speak for a couple days if you don't shoot him in the head. So he talked for a minute. And then I said, I guess I'm here because I impersonate Christopher Walken. And this is, I feel bad, but then I started doing, this bit at the time I was doing where when kids came to the door on Halloween, I would try to scare them by doing Christopher Walken. And then I acted out. I can't remember. Hey, kids, trick or treat. It's a damn good question. I too, as fate would have it, have a question. Which one of you little shits can guess what I've buried under my house? Hey, kids, where you going? So I'm doing that, right? And I see him bending at the waist forward, laughing uncontrollably. And it was one of those you can take me now moments, right?
Yeah. Wow, man. Yeah,
that's
pretty
awesome.
Pretty crazy.
Well, I want to ask, he touched on your poker playing. Mm. So are you part of, like, I know you're a huge poker player.
I know
that in Hollywood, there's a couple, like, is there like a underground like poker?
Yeah.
Like
we play in Batman's cave.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, how dark.
Because you hear, like, I've heard through the years stories like Leo plays and Toby plays and Ben Affleck plays and this and that. Like,
yeah. There's a few games that tend to have more celebrities than not. There's a few high stake games. There's a few moderate stake games. You know.
Do you like playing with celebrities? Does it make a difference?
I don't. Well, initially it's okay, and then to me it's just more about the poker. I'm much more interested in the poker. Like Don Cheadle plays in my game on occasion. I'm trying to think who else you might know. Ray Amato's played a couple times. Mm. Jason Reitman's played a couple times.
Well, can I just ask what the buy-in if something like that is?
At my game it's very. You know, it's just funny. I consider it really low stakes, but it's all relative. You know, I may come off obnoxious saying that a $500 buy-in is nothing because there are games around town where it's a $20,000.
Oh, yeah. $500, I would have expected
much more.
Much more. Yeah, especially at the level you play.
It's my friends. Like, I don't want them to get hurt. True. You know what I mean?
Jesus.
You could win or lose a couple of grand, and that's kind of enough on a weekly basis. If you play with the same people over and over, because the games are going on almost 5 years, you're basically just moving the money around the table on a weekly basis. Nobody wins every week, and nobody loses every week.
When you lower it to five, that's when I'll be
$5?
Yes.
Buy-in? Yeah.
20 max.
Well, again, it's all relative.
Do people ever confuse you for Robert De Niro?
Well, Ben, that's great podcasting. You do that face. That's just rock solid. That goes right through into people's ears.
From this angle for a second, I kind of like, it definitely seemed very De Niro.
If I frown and breathe through my nose too much, it could come off as De Niro. But no, that was
that's
not
awesome.
Who's your favorite one to do an impression of? And are you working on any new ones?
Well, I can teach you a couple. Walken's probably the favorite in a way, just because when I go down that rabbit hole in his thoughts, you get to be crazy for a couple of minutes. Because that's the thing for me, they're all possessions. I don't sort of dabble. I'll go deep undercover, basically. Because you start thinking like, look, when I do Albert Brooks, I actually think faster and funnier when doing Albert Brooks because he's so much more ridiculously funny than me. So, you know, you're improvising in that case. Like, I never did quotes from movies. It was always just off the top. And so I can meander around. I do this on stage. I can tell the audience, I can walk around my house for hours talking as Christopher Walken. And I don't realize I'm doing it until the cat passes out from fear. it just happens. So that's fun. And then I realized I could do Liam Neeson. I wasn't even thinking about doing him at all.
That is his dream guest for the podcast.
Well, see, I can't speak him. I can only say one word. Because I realized I could do it because I was driving in my car and I was on the way to the grocery store. And I was thinking about what I had to get on the list, and I'd never heard Liam Neeson say this word ever, but for some reason I looked into the rearview mirror and said bananas. Again, never heard him say bananas ever. Don't know why he would say that, and or why that's him in a single word. And then I pictured him at the IHOP, you know, what do you want on your waffle, Mr. Neeson? Bananas. And it just went off. And then the other one I can teach you is Jason Statham. So he says six words faster than any human being on the planet. He reduces six words to two syllables. The six words are, do you know what I mean? Which he says as, Joe Mean.
That's true.
You say Joe Mean, actually, with a little gravel. A little gravel in your voice, and you got
Albert Brooks. Can I hear a little bit of that? I love.
Well,
Albert
you have
Brooks.
To ask a question because I need to know where I'm going with this.
Let's see, Mr. Brooks. Finding Dory is coming out.
Yes, I'm so excited. Can I be honest with you? You're sitting in a booth. You're by yourself. I don't even know what these fish look like. Is it me? Am I crazy? I'm gonna go lie down.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I got my fill. Yeah. Well, that's.
That actually brings us into our perfect round three, but first we have to finish up round two, and you have to decide who asked the better interview questions.
I know.
And you're not allowed to say it's a tie? Because I don't have a clear...
It all flowed together so well.
It
I don't
really
remember
did.
Who asked
it
what.
It felt like
did
two it? Guys it, asking...
Yeah. Felt like a team.
It did.
A team there.
It felt teamwork, not a competition. Yeah. I'm going to have to vote yes for the team.
Okay.
And
okay.
no for the individuality.
So that's okay. me. I have 1.5 wins and you have a half win.
Okay.
That's correct.
Okay. We'll go to the third round.
I'll accept that.
It seems and like he can only tie then.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
In the third round. Did you have any questions though, Ari?
Sorry. Not a, you know, I under the gun.
I learned a lot and... I just can't wait to hear the third round.
Okay.
Well, wow.
The third round's going to get
are
interesting.
Are you also running for office? That was so...
The third round's going to be interesting. Since you are someone who does celebrity impressions...
Correct. Mm-hmm. Continue. Small Jews for 400.
our mini battle off is each of us have to do an impression.
Oh!
And then you get to judge.
Oh,
now,
boy, do I.
Let me tell you one thing. Theo likes to do Morgan Freeman all the time, so I said he cannot do Morgan Freeman.
Although I will need to hear a little, because you're already in the wheelhouse being from New Orleans with the Southern.
I'll do my little Morgan Freeman, but this isn't part of it.
No, this isn't part of it, but we just want
to
hear
it. Hear your shitty impressions.
Yeah.
They said it would take a man 600 years to get out of this here prison, but Andy Dufresne did it in less than 20.
It's both the best and the worst.
That's hilarious. Yeah. And I would say also that is the best and the worst.
Yeah. So he's not.
But it's hilarious.
To do that.
I like when you make him funny.
Well, I appreciate you even listening to
and the only one that I know how to do is Katharine Hepburn. And
sure.
I've done that numerous times, so I won't do Katharine Hepburn either. And I like to do Katharine Hepburn saying sexual things. Like,
of course.
Oh, I remember when Gregory Peck fucked me in the ass.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah. It's always Peck. I'm
going to
close my eyes because I can't look at that ridiculous face you're making.
Sorry. It's just
think of anyone but you.
It's just my face.
Mine's not going to be much better. Trust.
Welcome to another edition of Rescue 911 and Star Trek. I am in space, and I am William Shatner.
So
I would have never guessed who that was.
I shouldn't have told who it was.
No.
It would have been funny.
I think it was hilarious and imperative that you let anyone know who you were doing by calling him out by name.
Okay.
Yeah, that was fantastic. I mean, when you say 911 and Star Trek, we're going to get there.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I looked at my mom, and she still had no clue.
I'm going to be honest. I didn't know who
it was first of all, you've chosen someone that technically I might be famous for doing also.
Yeah.
So that was bold. You're going to get extra points for that.
Yes.
Yeah. And then there's
making him feel good.
Then there's the level of how much that sounded nothing like that. I'm not even sure you can quantify it.
So you're getting points for how bad it was.
Yeah, yeah, so far. Yeah. But also the boldness, again.
Welcome.
No, you're done. Yeah, you can't. It's not going to get any better.
Okay,
welcome. Is it?
I mean, it's more James Earl Jones than it is even William Shatner.
It can't get worse.
James Earl Jones. It's not James Earl Jones. It's not William Shatner. It's not anyone necessarily. It's not you. Yeah, that was no one in particular. It was just a commitment, which is all that matters to me.
That's true. That's
You've got to commit. You have to commit.
All right. Well, I have one of two that I'm going to do, and I think I'm going to go with the second one.
All right.
And I know you don't like movie lines.
Baiting. You can do whatever you want.
But that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, you're going to get less points.
Who am I? It's been 84 years, and I could still smell the china. Oh, no, wait. It's been 84 years, and I can still smell the fresh paint. The china had never been used. The sheets had never been slept in. Titanic was called the Ship of Dreams. And it was. It really was.
Wow.
Okay.
And then the same character takes the necklace that she has and she throws it into the ocean and she goes,
ah! Have you heard this impression before, Mom? No. You just can't believe he did that. You can't believe he did that sound, or you can't believe he felt that was an important part of the impression to do.
No, that is. I think that's the best part of the impression. Ah!
Yeah, no, that is.
She stands on the thing and she's, ah!
Yeah.
I'm like, bitch, why'd you throw that in the ocean? But okay. No, that's what I remember. Okay, so that was maybe, my Gloria Stewart.
Maybe, no, clearly it was. If you hadn't said the word Titanic, there's almost no chance I would have known who it was.
Not even with the...
I thought that was out of Africa. I thought it was out of Africa.
You don't even know what that is.
I saw it.
No, you did not.
It is. It's about like race baiting in the jungle.
There you go. No, it is not. So in other words, you're saying,
well, I'm saying you should, either of you
rescue.
Should not do these impressions for financial gain, for the attempt at financial gain.
You're supposed to coach them into getting better.
Or even recognition. Yeah. Don't do them for as a way to test someone. Do you know who this is?
Okay.
Yeah. Cause that would be unfair to whoever you're testing.
Fair enough.
Gosh, I don't know where to begin with the William Shatner because
edition.
Peter Jennings.
So you're going for the authoritative.
Yeah.
That's what you, because there's always one little spice that you must grab onto.
Isn't it with William Shatner more than like,
Well, that's what the norm is, to take advantage that he speaks in a ridiculous staccato. Which you did not do, which you get points for. You went with. It's clear to me now. You went with the authoritative. That's what you hear, because you have to hear the voice first to do them. So you must have heard something authoritative.
Yes.
And there is great a level of pompous in Shatner's voice. So you kind of got that, but then you went a little George Takei with the low register.
Yeah.
And you didn't have any of that. He tends to stutter. his voice goes up at the end. I think, which none of that was present.
They actually sounded no.
Okay,
but you did find the authoritative vein that I'd not heard people do before. So you do get a couple of points for that.
Okay.
Yes. So you get a couple of points for the ridiculous nature of that tag, which again. No one would have ever connected to the actor's Gloria Stewart.
My brother
Stewart.
Would have.
Okay. Only because he's heard it before and you explained it to him.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you had said to someone on the street, who is this? And then made that sound, you would get 1,000 people out of 1,000 saying, I have no idea.
You'd also get paid for sex, probably.
Yeah, that's true.
A little further down Santa Monica Boulevard.
Hey, it's a win-win.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, ultimately, you have to pick a winner of this round and or, if you don't, it's too close to tell, the entire podcast. And that's, you can... Factor in whatever you want.
Well, I'm going to have to make it a tie at 1.5 apiece in terms of awarding a whole point
okay.
in this round.
Okay. You can give negative points, too, if you want.
Well, no, I won't give negative points.
Right. He's a good guy.
But we are tied at 1.5 now.
Okay.
So now what happened?
I don't know.
You've not had tiebreakers before?
Fourth round.
We've
well, I guess
never...
You've never had half points given?
No, not really.
We could do one more character, I guess.
For the opportunity to see if the third one you do sounds also very similar to the first two. Mm-hmm. I am interested in this.
Okay, you got someone else?
I think I can do one.
She went right into it again.
Yeah. Oh, fuck. I was almost
maybe pick a lady.
Let me do a lady.
Let me do a lady.
Oh, Archie, I can't even find my pantyhose.
Okay, that sounded like the cat from Itchy and Scratchy.
Okay, all right, I'm out.
Hey, at least it sounded like someone.
Yeah.
There you go. Thanks, Ari.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then
who was it supposed to be?
I don't know, that lady Eid.
What is the deal with the peanuts?
Uh-huh.
Well, you're on the plane, and there's the peanuts.
Oh, I know.
And then there's the deal. What is the deal? You got it? You know who it is?
Yeah, I know who it is.
Okay.
I know who it is.
Well, that says a lot.
That I
love Barbara Streisand.
Barbara Streisand. Memory. No. That was Jerry Seinfeld.
Maybe you can just win this round, Ken.
Can you win.
Can you give us one more of your favorite ones, and we'll call it that.
I realized now when I do stand up, I sort of deconstruct that doing an impersonation is a parlor trick. If I can think of someone you like and I can recreate them in front of you, I'm basically stealing the affection you have for the actual person.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But my problem now is I've been doing impersonations my whole life. Everyone hears voices in their head. Like, should I have that slice of pie? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when I hear voices in my head, they're all famous. So for the pie, I realized the other day it was Al Pacino. Oh, you're having the pie. You are having the pie. My question right now is, what year did I become an old black blues player? I don't understand it. Oh, clearly, I yelled too much after Son of a Woman. A lot of movies yelling. Nothing but yelling. Now I move my hands around like this for no reason. I'm always moving. So I found myself in the aisle at the grocery store. Again, sent to get the item. And I'm standing in the spice area. I'm looking for a very specific spice. Just so determined not to fuck this up. And I know it's going to happen. And I cannot believe I'm looking at 5,000 fucking spice containers and I can't find the one I've been sent to get. And I find myself in the aisle of Ralph's or Rafe's, as we like to call it, just yelling, McCormick! McCormick! Where's McCormick? I can't see it. I know it's here somewhere. McCormick! I don't know what, and I really was doing this not to be funny, not to be entertaining, which I'm clearly doing it now for, just yelling at the fucking spice rack.
Wow. All right, you win.
All right.
By the way, tell us when your movie is set to come out.
Oh, so I guess the end of the fall. Yeah, it's called The Late Bloomer.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know the story well because I know Ken Baker when I worked at Us Weekly.
Of course.
And you directed it?
I did.
That's awesome.
It's an interesting story.
Yeah, based on a guy who did not go through puberty in the movie till the age 30. I think in real life for him it was like 28.
Yeah.
Mm. Johnny Simmons, a wonderful actor.
Yep.
Plays the character who in our film is a PhD. But, you know, J.K. Simmons, Maria Bello plays his parents. Jane Lynch plays his boss. Who else? Kumail Nanjiani and Beck Bennett plays best friends.
Wow.
Ken Marino plays one of the
Are you in this as well? Or just
Brittany
direct?
Brittany Snow plays a girl across the hall. Great cast. I'm not in it. No, I wanted to just direct.
That's awesome.
It was really fun.
I bet
really
you did a great job. I bet you were a great director.
We had one, thank you. We had one a sort of test screening, scored really, really well, about 125 people. And it just to hear laughs all the way through.
Yeah.
Was pretty amazing.
I find it interesting because you also acted in something on the Project Greenlight, right? When they did that first time around, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And did you learn stuff from that you took as a director?
I learned from good directors.
Yeah.
Pete Jones, bless him. That was his first crack. And I thought he did well, but I'm not going to learn much from a guy learning how to do it.
That's true. Good point. Did you ever play poker with Ben Affleck?
I did. He's a very good player. In fact, he won one of the, he may have won the biggest
legitimate tournament. It was the LA Classic, I want to say, part of the WPT, I believe. Like $360,000+ was, I think, the biggest purse a celebrity has ever.
He's not even allowed in some like casinos now.
No, he hasn't. He has been.
That's crazy.
He's on the list.
He's on the list. Are you on any list?
I've played poker with him.
Did you win? Did you beat
times.
Him? Have you?
I played recently in his tournament, and I definitely lasted longer because I made it to the final table, and he did not.
Wow.
Is when you can't go anymore to a casino, what does that mean? You're like
banned
because you win too much.
I don't know if it was because he did they.
Well,
I'm not sure if it was
accusing
him of
counting cards.
Oh,
which they can't prove. All they can do is accuse you.
But well, there's the behind the scenes they can.
But counting cards has nothing to do with poker. It's just blackjack. They can't really ban you for poker because they get a piece. They get a rake
of the.
So they're not.
Right, they're making money anyway. I wish they banned me. Couldn't lose any more money. Yeah.
You know what? I've never heard anyone say that before. That is unbelievably truthful.
That is very
truthful. In fact, I'm going to give the whole contest to you just for...
Oh, no! I should have cut it off.
You pulled it off at the very end.
Wow.
Yeah,
something
Whoopi
I'd
Goldberg.
Never heard before. That's one of the most profound things I've heard about gambling. I wish they would cut me off.
Wow.
Yeah. There you go.
I love that. And thank you so much, Kevin.
Dude,
we appreciate your time.
Thanks for coming
in. Listen, I'm glad you were able to convince me to do this.
Yeah.
Right on.
I had a good time.